Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to TWiT and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 266, recorded September 19th, 2010. Musty Shellbang. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMyPC. Think remote access to your PC or Mac is complicated? Think again. It's easy with GoToMyPC. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com/TWiT. And by Carbonite Pro. With prices starting at $10 a month, all your office PCs can be backed up safely and automatically. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by Ford. And the new Ford Fiesta. With an EPA estimated 40 miles per gallon, no other compact car is more fuel efficient. Plus, 15 other features offered by no other vehicle in its class. That's the 2011 Ford Fiesta. Drive one at a Ford dealer near you. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the shoe that covers all the technology news. Here he is with his luscious hair and just looking fantastic, which is surprising because his show just got canceled. John C. Dvorak, good to see you.
Hello.
We're going to talk about cranky geeks leaving the airwaves next week. That's terrible, terrible news. Also here with us, Baratunde Thurston from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn represented well.
Very well on this show. Great to see you again, Baratunde. When's your book come out?
My book comes out in a year, so we have plenty of time to keep pumping those pre-sales and email signups at baratunde.com.
There you go.
But in the meantime, there are other people with nearer publication dates or recently published dates.
Like perhaps this fellow here.
Perfect segue.
Nick Bilton of the Bits blog. He's the editor. You're the editor of Bits, the Bits blog on the New York Times site, right?
I'm the lead technology writer.
Lead technology writer. And the author of a brand new book.
Yes, here.
I Live in the Future and Here's How It Works by Nick Bilton. What's in that book?
The future is in that book.
Wow.
Lots of good stuff about the next 5 years and how technology is changing society and things like that.
And he has a dog named Pixel.
I'd like to know who's going to win the Triple Crown next.
Wouldn't that be useful?
Yeah. Well, if you buy the book, John, you may actually get that answer.
I'll call the publisher and get a review
copy. Yeah, he doesn't buy anything, Nick. Is there a QR code for that?
Yeah. Actually, it's a secret. It's a little Easter egg in the book.
That's kind of neat because every chapter has a QR code leading into it that you can then, with your smartphone, I guess, take a picture of, and then it will bring you to the forum where you can comment on that.
Yeah, there's videos, all the links I talk about, all the papers, research papers and news articles and books. I link to them on a mobile site and a mobile application. And then you can comment. And there's actually people going in there and having conversations about the chapter and calling me funny names. So
And I didn't mean to insult you when I said this before the show started, but it seems like that's the kind of thing like fins on a car that will appear dated in some time in the future. Maybe not so far distant.
I like those things.
QR codes?
Yeah, I think it was a good idea.
I guess what other way could you do it?
Well, there's one technology, I forget the name of it, where you can take a picture of a series of words and it recognizes what it is. But even that, you have to have a certain type of phone and a certain app, and your camera has to be pretty high res. And so semicodes seemed like the best solution.
Although I think, maybe when Google Goggles gets more mature, that would be the kind of thing Goggles could do directly. John, what are you doing? You sound like you're disassembling something.
Trying to get something. The licorice ones out. Those are the ones I actually like.
He's trying to remove all the black jelly beans from Gina's gift. Gina Trapani is also here. Gina is the co-host of This Week in Google on our network. She writes blogs at smarterware.org, founder of Lifehacker. She still writes there and does a great column, too, on Fast Company. In fact, her new video piece is fastcompany.com/worksmart. Very cool. And it's her birthday.
It is. Hello.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Gina.
Gina is exactly as old as the 6502.
Yes, I am.
Is that an old Pontiac you're talking about?
No. You know, the 6502, which powered the Apple II computer, the first Atari 400.
Chuck Peddle's.
Chuck Peddle. Very good. Yeah.
1975 was a fine year.
In fact, I have somewhere, if I can find it, I guess if I go to leoville.posterous.com, I'll be able to find it, a ad that was kind of co-contemporary with the launch of the 6502. Let me see if I can find this here. Featuring William Shatner.
Looking very young.
Looking very
slim.
Young and svelte and slim. And he's advertising and handsome. Let's not forget advertising for. Well, let's just play it for you because it's kind of cool to see. He beams in.
The video game from Atari or Intellivision. Invest in the wonder computer of the 1980s for under $300.
What is he doing with his hands?
Unlike games, it has
Look,
a real computer
he's
keyboard.
Touching the keyboard.
With the Commodore VIC-20, the whole family can learn computing at home. Plays great games too. Under $300, the wonder computer of the 1980s.
Looks like a Mac.
The Commodore VIC-20. Coming soon, Commodore brings you Gorf, the wonder arcade game, and Omega Race in home versions. Commodore.
Wow, I love, thank God for YouTube. We wouldn't have any record
awesome.
Of that.
That was pretty awesome. Amazing.
Did you have who had a Commodore 64? You guys are all too young to have had a you had
no,
one,
I
Nick?
Did, totally, yeah. I used to play Chuck Yeg and write little code where I would like, 10 if press X go 220, you know, I mean, it was awesome.
Chuck Yeager was like the original flight simulator.
No, it was the game where you had to collect eggs. It was almost like a
Chuck ghetto. Egg, not Chuck Yeager.
Chuck Egg. Yeah. Chuck Egg. It was like a ghetto Mario.
A big
Brothers.
Check came in for Leo.
I was trying,
Leo,
I was trying
I
to
imagine.
Sound so smart. Oh yeah. Chuck Yeager. Yeah. He's the guy. It was wasn't there a Chuck Yeager flight simulator game? There was.
I fully expect Nick to write, I live in the past and here's how it works.
Yeah.
That's my second book.
If somebody could figure out how the past works, I would be thrilled. I would buy that book. Forget the future. We could barely handle the past. Well, let's talk about this week's news. That was one of the stories, of course, was that the 6502 hit its 35th birthday. You know, it's fun. I mean, 35's not that old. Look at Gina. but for a computer, that's ancient, isn't it? For technology, that's really, really old. It feels like that was the dark ages of personal computing.
Pretty old.
Our cycles of upgrade and our expectations have accelerated along with time. So, you know, if you have a 3-year-old computer, that's a pretty much a stretch. A 35-year-old computer is just sort of an artifact that belongs in a museum, really. So to think about what that could do in the upper limits of those times versus what we expect now is a big disconnect.
As a matter of fact, I did write for Ahoy Magazine.
Ahoy Magazine, the Commodore 64 hobbyist mag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote
somebody in the chip room, in the chat
chip room. I used to write for an old Atari magazine. So, those days really were long ago. It's funny, and now where things move faster than ever, don't they? I mean,
right, and there's no magazines.
And there's no magazines. There really aren't. Nick, what is it like in the New York Times newsroom these days? I mean, you are the future of the New York Times, the website.
It's fun. I mean, you know, it's pretty interesting. There's a new culture of journalists that is coming in, and you know, I'm part of that crew, and people like Brian Stelter, who writes on the media desk, and you know, we're just trying to experiment with real-time reporting and tweeting as we're researching and asking people questions, and you know, and the blog format versus the print format, and it's fun. I mean, we're having a really great time.
Yeah, I would say of all the newspapers, and this would be kind of the last thing you'd expect of the Gray Lady, of all the newspapers out there, the New York Times has, in fact, done a great job of moving into the future. Although you look at something like USA Today, which we would also say maybe another press, you know, effort to be futuristic, and they're talking about putting the print paper to bed, basically.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. In the newsroom, there's a group of hackers that they hack code all day, you know, and
really?
They look at documents, and yeah, it's pretty impressive to see the way that's transitioned and that's happened. So
you didn't get bit by. Let's be honest here. Did anybody get bit by the tornado Twitter picture? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I luckily did not. I was at a party that evening, so I did not.
The Time magazine people got bit. Time blogger. Yep. So there were some minor tornadoes in the Queens and the Bronx. Is that right?
And Brooklyn.
Yeah.
How does it? We have three people from Brooklyn on Skype today. That's just a weird coincidence.
Because Brooklyn is just dominated. That's just how it works.
It is.
Like, if it was a city on its own, it would be like the, I don't know, the fourth largest city in the States or something like that.
2.3 million incredible people live in Brooklyn. It's bigger than Manhattan by far. It's a massive city. It's a planet, if you want to be honest about
it. How many unincredible people are there?
Too many. We don't like to talk about them. Thanks, Sean. That's a good question. Do not appreciate your insightful journalism at this time.
That's, by the way, that's a new Pixar film, The Unincredibles. It'd be coming to the theater near you. So there was a, I mean, come on, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, it can't have been a tornado. It was like a funnel cloud, right?
It was two tornadoes. It was it was pretty insane. There was trees on top of cars and cats and dogs. It was in all seriousness, there was a guy who took photos of, actually video of some crabs in the park.
Great. You got 2 million people with all those phones. Where's the movie? Where's the video of a funnel cloud of any sort?
Well,
this was a burst, a microburst. It's bull crap.
But that's what happened, because somebody found a 25-year-old picture of an actual tornado near the Statue of Liberty. Twit picked it. Actually, might have been a blogger from Time magazine.
So just photoshopped it.
Yeah, you could have. But it wasn't. This is a real photo. Somebody found it on the NOAA site, and it took over Twitter. Everybody said, "Oh my God, this tornado that almost blew over the Statue of Liberty." Kind of embarrassing. But see, that's in the age of instant journalism, Nick. That could happen to anybody, right?
It's true, but it was quickly realized that it was fake, and that can happen too. So
your point being, yes, news breaks fast, but it also.
It's corrected. It's also rectified very quickly, right. I think.
It's kind of the Wikipedia style of a fact.
It's true, yep.
Yeah. I guess that's fair.
Do you find, and this is a newsroom question for Nick, which we've never talked about, kind of not on the show, but do you find that corrections are closer in volume of reach to the initial mistake nowadays than they were in the past? Because I always worry that, you know, that first tweet or Facebook update or email or blog post goes out, and that establishes a certain fact. You later find out it's wrong. Now, with the high-speed communications we have, the correction comes out sooner. Does it have a larger effect on the impact of the original because we move so much faster now?
That's a very good question.
Well, it's a good question. I think one of the things that we've struggled with is in the technology section is that, you know, when you let's be realistic. Okay, so Apple puts out a press release that they're releasing a new iPad, right? Most tech blogs, the goal is to get it up as soon as possible, right? So what they'll do is they'll write one sentence and they'll copy and paste the press release. At the times, we're not allowed to do that. It's part of the standards that we can't do that. We have to report the story. So we have to, as quickly as possible, get something together that's a story and get it up. And it can take 15, 16, 17 minutes sometimes. And that's a pretty big deal when you're looking at this, especially the technology blogosphere space. And we go through the same thing with other breaking news, and I think we just have to be really careful that we don't put something up unless we've actually done the research and the reporting to say, hey, this actually did happen or this didn't.
So the HuffPost does have a video, supposedly of the it has a video of the event, but there's no tornado cloud that I can see, just a bunch of rain.
It was definitely more than one of my friends showed me a photo from. There used to be a roof over the hallway of his apartment building,
yep.
And he showed me this picture. I'm like, oh, that's a beautiful skylight. He's like, no, the roof got ripped off.
Whoa, skylight! That's a hole.
I was at first. I thought I was jealous of him for having so much natural light in his building. And that wasn't natural.
Aren't you an optimist? Aren't you glass half full kind of a guy?
I'm glass like has something in it kind of guy. Yeah. So,
yeah, very very nice. I like that, Baritone.
John, I thought it was BS at first. I thought that it wasn't a hurricane, but actually yesterday the Times put out a news alert that the National Weather Association said there were two tornadoes, that did strike Brooklyn on Thursday. So
it just surprised me with that many people that one person has a picture of the funnel cloud. I mean, it looks like a microburst to me, where you have like a lot of heavy wind, the kind of thing that drops airplanes. I mean, this video I'm watching is just mostly just a kind of a deluge.
Après moi, le déluge.
We could, bartender, you want to give me a hand? We'll Photoshop something real quick for John.
that would help. Then we'd be back on track.
There's a tornado inside the Pathmark in Brooklyn.
have one picking up a subway train.
No, that was just a really hungry lady.
We'll have one of the guys in the chat room by the end of this show. We'll have a beautifully done.
It's harder to fake video, though, right?
Videos, yeah. Well, they'll just have a photo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where's the photos even?
Well, there's that one photo, but
there are a lot of photos. I saw a photo of like the M from the Met Food sign, you know, two blocks from the actual Met Food, and just, you know, trees just crossing.
Yeah, but somebody could have picked up that sign and moved it.
You know,
people in Missouri are going, you guys are such wimps. There's one tornado in like this tiny little tornado. And it's like the big news because it's this is exactly what the rest of the country thinks. That it,
yeah, know, everything centers around
everything
New York.
Everything centers around New York. Oh, my God, they had a tornado. Wow.
Meanwhile, Oklahomans are going, what?
What? That wasn't a tornado. That was a heavy wind. Let's talk about, well, as long as we're talking about Fast Press, Mike Arrington publishes a story this morning on the on TechCrunch saying Facebook's doing a phone. Mike probably figured that Facebook wouldn't get around to correcting that till Monday, and he'd get at least a 24-hour news cycle. Facebook, apparently wise to TechCrunch's tricks, immediately says, that is so not true.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
I saw the rumor go up. I read, actually, there was an extensive piece by Jose Vargas in New Yorker this week where he profiles Mark Zuckerberg.
That's a good article.
Great piece. Actually, Anil Dash did a really good follow-up on that. It's like, they're both very long pieces, but if you have time, I think they're both quite worth
it. And the New Yorker posted that one online, which is nice. You can go to newyorker.com and read it, which is
good. You know, yeah. I Instapapered that and read it on my iPad. But, you know, the idea that Facebook would do a phone, it seems actually a little bit troubling, but also quite logical. I mean, there's so much of your world that's in there. The idea of posting photos, the idea of you have all your contacts in one place. I'm not a fan of it because I imagine that like a Facebook phone would default to speakerphone mode or something highly public.
Privacy? You want privacy? Get another phone!
But if you didn't have those trust issues, I think the concept of an entity that knows who you communicate with on what frequency and manages a lot of your media already to have more than an app but actually a device that put you totally in sync with that does make some amount of sense. Google did it. We have higher trust for Google than Facebook. I throw that out there as a logical possibility. When you add the controversy around Facebook, it's very troubling. So,
I was in Facebook last week.
Go ahead. Hold on, Nick. Let's Gina talk here.
Oh, sorry. I just saw like those Facebook credit gift cards in Target last week, and I was just surprised. I had never seen them before. And then when I heard about the phone, I thought about it. It's like if I'm a junior or senior in high school or even college, and I'm shopping for a phone, you know, I'm getting my first cell phone. The Facebook phone just makes total sense. I mean, I'm not that person, but it makes a lot of sense. I feel like marketing wise, it would be a smart move.
Really? Okay. See, I looked at that article. I thought that's not true. And of course, Facebook immediately says, "Well, we are in the business of making sure that every phone that comes out has Facebook on it." But the last thing we want to do is make a phone. What do they need to make a phone for? Every phone has to have Facebook. In fact, we talked on Windows Weekly this week to the guy responsible for evangelizing Microsoft's Windows Phone 7. And this week they announced, you bet, a Twitter app, a Facebook app. You don't ship a smartphone without Facebook on it these days. Usually built in, right?
They get 100 million people that are accessing the mobile site and using their mobile apps every month. So, you know, it's a lot of people using it. But about them working on a phone, I worked on a story, a blog post I posted earlier this month about Amazon has been discussing their Lab 126 about building other devices beyond the Kindle. And one of the things that they actually discussed internally was the idea of doing a phone. They're not moving forward with that right now. But that was a discussion in a meeting that I got from a couple of sources there. If Apple and Microsoft are moving into their turf, why wouldn't they move the other way also?
I guess that's true because I kind of mocked the idea that Amazon would do hardware. I thought that was a very strange thing to do, and obviously I was wrong about that. They've had a huge success with the Kindle.
Yeah.
Even in the face of competition from the iPad, they continue to sell very, very well. So maybe it is.
And they've taken a pretty amazing approach with that. I mean, I originally thought that as soon as the iPad came out, why would someone spend, $250 on a Kindle when you can get almost a full computer, but their approach with going the other way and saying, you know what, we'll sell you one for $140, I think has worked pretty well for them.
Brilliant. They're so cheap now, and they're nice.
Yeah.
Somebody called the radio show the other day and said, well, you know, I've heard about this, Pan Digital, and you know, there's all these other ebook readers. What should I buy? And it seems to me a no-brainer. You just buy the Amazon one, right? I mean, they just own that market.
MySpace is thinking of doing a phone too, but it's going to be a piece of junk.
Really lousy design.
Hey, I got a million of them.
It allows you to customize your phone so you can't use it. That's,
And it's always playing music.
And it's got moving background wallpaper.
And it's covered with animated GIFs.
I'm sorry. You know, MySpace phone seems like a good idea, actually, now that I think about it. Dancing bears.
A cat running back and forth across the screen.
John C. Dvorak is here. Nick Bilton from the New York Times. Baratunde Thurston, great to see him. Gina Trapani, her birthday today. We've got a lot more to talk about before we go on. I want to talk a little bit about Go to My PC from our great folks, our great friends at Citrix, the guys who do remote access at the highest level, remote access for the enterprise. They also do great consumer products. And if you've ever tried remote access and said, it's too complicated, it's slow, I got to get around the firewall, I got to do port forwarding or DMZing, you got to try Go to My PC. Built-in NAT traversal, 128-bit SSL, absolutely secure. There's never been a remote exploit. This thing works, is rock solid, and is easy to use and absolutely fast. Go to My PC. You don't have to take my word for it. You can try it right now, 30 days free. Just go to gotomypc.com/twit, gotomypc.com. John, are you caught in your wires there? Are you stuck? He can't get out. He's trapped. He can't get out of here. He's trying to run.
He locked me in.
You're stuck. No more leaving in the commercials, Dvorak. gotomypc.com/twit. We thank him so much for their support and invite you to give it a try. Today! Other big news in the world, Intel says anybody who tries to copy a Blu-ray is going to hear from our lawyers.
What has Intel got to do with it?
They invented HDCP, apparently.
And so they feel what they're worried sick about is they're going to get sued by somebody.
Oh, maybe somebody else will sue them.
Yeah. Hey, look what you did, this thing you sold us. It stinks.
So Monday, this is surprising that it took so long. How long did it take high school student DVD John to crack DVD CSS protection? Like a week? Like a month? It was almost instantaneous.
It was a while.
But part of the problem is that in order for a player to work, it has to have the key. So you know these technologies are always going to be flawed, because if you could just figure out where the key is stored, there always has to be a copy of the key in the clear in order to play back the DVD or the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So apparently, this is kind of interesting. It was found on Monday, or appeared on Monday, in Pastebin. Gina, you must have used Pastebin. You know about Pastebin.
I do know about Pastebin.
It's just a place where you post stuff.
Yeah, you usually use it to share code.
It's actually been in the news a couple of times because I think there was if you search for Visa cards, you can find a bunch of Visa card numbers on Pastebin. People apparently use it to store their credit cards.
They do.
Not a good idea.
I've seen like dpaste used to share code snippets with people. I haven't heard of this.
I think that's what Pastebin is really for, is a quick way to share little code snippets.
It's for open source coders in IRC channels who want to share code snippets without pasting it into the entire IRC channel. That's like the original source of these kinds of sites. But
and it's completely anonymous. So a great place to do something like share the HDCP code. It's now mirrored on hundreds of other websites. Let's see. CSS was cracked in 1999. So you're right, John. It did take a little while for DVDs to be cracked.
How long did it take?
Well, 99. When did DVDs come out?
Went to Commodore 64, right?
Yeah. 35 years ago.
There was the Declaration of Independence, then DVDs, and the Constitution.
Yeah. Let me see. I'm looking at a Wired article from 1999, which announced the DVD crack. With the title of it, Why the DVD Hack Was a Cinch. Talks about this issue of the code being stored in the clear. Jan Johansson, the founder of More in Norway, the high school kid who's now known as DVD John. He's got actually a pretty good little product now called Double Twist. He's gone... straight.
I mean, DVDs came out in 95. They weren't as super popular that first year, obviously.
So it took 4 years.
Yeah.
But Blu-ray's been out longer than 4 years, so it took them a little longer. But you got to figure the MPAA and the motion picture folks and everybody said, they broke CSS so fast, we got to find something.
It's not Blu-ray's been out for a long time, but this protocol is fairly new. The HDCP.
Oh, you're right. You're right. HDCP
that was just another...
isn't the Blu-ray protection. It's the protection that keeps you from playing. Yeah, it's what comes out of the Blu-ray player. into a TV. In order to watch a Blu-ray player on a TV, both devices have to HDCP compliant.
Right.
So, that you can't use the analog hole.
Right.
So I guess you're right. It's not as old as Blu-ray.
In fact, HDCP, I mean, that's what they claim it's for. But the fact of the matter is HDCP was invented just to add one more feature to a flat screen TV to make you have to buy a new generation of television. They've done it just about six times, and they got a new one coming up. This is a scam.
Pretty soon they're going to have color TVs, and then you're going to have to buy another one.
It's a scam.
It's a trap. No, I think you're right. I'm being facetious. I think you're right. It could well be not have nothing to do with copy protection. It could have to do with requiring you to buy all new crap.
Yeah, there's another round of this coming, too. There's something they just announced the other day. I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe one of you guys know it. But it's some other thing they're going to add to these TVs, which you're going to have to buy another TV.
Yeah.
I'll just use my computer. I'm good.
TVs are history.
Oh, they're gone.
TVs are gone. History. Yeah. Well, you live
Tell
in the
that
future,
to Costco.
Nick. Are there any TVs where you live?
Yeah, I wish Nick could give a tour of his like living room setup. It is.
Oh, it's insane.
Do you have a TV?
No, no TV.
I have a TV that is hooked up to a computer, and then I have this wireless little donut mouse. It looks like a chocolate donut, and it's got buttons on it, and then I have a wireless keyboard, and we just use that. I mean, we don't have cable. We canceled it over a year ago, and it works perfectly.
Yeah, what are you running onto the TV?
Sometimes Hulu, sometimes Netflix with Boxy, sometimes just go to YouTube directly on the. I mean, it's just pretty much everything. It's the web.
Use your computer as the source, not something like a Roku player or something like that.
Well, I have a Roku player that I tested out. I also have the other thing I actually do use quite a bit is the Xbox.
It's a good media device.
Yeah, me too.
It's one of the greatest things about the Xbox is you can download any video format, put it on a USB stick, plug it into the Xbox, and it immediately recognizes. And if it doesn't, it goes and it gets the right format for it.
And it's a pretty powerful platform. It's got three power PCs. So it's interesting. All three Brooklynites use Xboxes for their media device.
I used to have a dedicated laptop running mostly Boxy full time, but then I loaned that laptop to a friend, so I'm reduced to Xbox only. So a lot of Netflix streaming. I do have a cable service, but I don't, until very recently, I wasn't actually watching much cable. I recently decided I'm going to start following British like soccer football leagues. And so it's helpful to have actual cable to watch like Fox Sports or ESPN.
How does a decision like that happen, Baritone?
Man, yes, yeah, really.
The World Cup got me so amped about football, you know.
These games were rigged, man. They're rigged.
And just being a part of like a community, I don't know, like English and you know, world football is really, really exciting.
Oh, no, here we go.
You need one of these, Baritone.
I'm not a fan of the Vuvuzela. I'm not endorsing that.
You invited him to do that.
That's what you loved about the World Cup. Admit it.
No, I love that they filtered it. The networks that filtered.
Oh, they did such a great
job.
Notice
though, it sounds more realistic when you have two of them playing at once than if you just have one.
Please don't do that. Please don't.
Okay, in deference to you, Baritone.
Play a song on it. If you can play a song,
you can play. Why do you even have two?
I have a friend, Scott Wilkinson. You can't. You only can do two and a half notes on this. Scott Wilkinson, who does our home theater, he's the home theater geek, does the home theater geek podcast on Twit. He is a wind instrument player. He said he could play anything without a reed, any wind instrument without a reed. He plays the shofar, which is a ram's horn, and he could play that. And so I sent him one. And he said, you know, it's actually pretty nice because it doesn't cut your lip.
That's always a benefit.
That's a plus.
It doesn't cause me to bleed. Therefore, I'm going to endorse its product.
He says it can only play two, maybe three notes. You know, B flat and then an octave up and then an octave up. But I said, well, how come a bugle can play, you know, taps? But he said a bugle is much longer than this. This is too short because the bugle's wrapped around. So this is, he says, really,
if it was wrapped around, it'd be this. Yeah.
Right. It's a measure of how short the vuvuzela is.
Pellegrino.
Wow.
Pellegrino.
Aren't you glad you asked about that?
I feel bad about that, but I will say, like, going through the process, using the web to help me find, like, an English Premiership League to follow. I've gotten all to the podcast. I've met new Twitter friends.
You're un-American.
No, he's not.
Take away his passport, ladies and gentlemen.
Somebody
in the chat room pointed something out. Oh, this is amazing. Hey, Dvorak, just remember, soccer is more watched than American football. Unbelievable.
I don't know. Actually, I'm with you, Baratunde. I'm with you. I watched the World Cup. I got excited, too. I wanted more. I craved more.
Yeah, so the idea of the World Cup was amazing. A bar at 10 in the morning to watch, you know, a sport. Who couldn't get behind that?
Who couldn't fall asleep is the question I have.
And he shoots and nothing happens. And he goes down the field.
I'm sorry to take us off of that. Somebody take up a tech story, please.
I just wanted to say with sports. So I wrote this piece for the Times a year ago. It was actually my first ever print story about canceling my cable. And it immediately shot up to number one on the most email list for a week or so. And was, you know, almost a million views. And the one thing I said was that you can't get sports on your computer. And the way people were doing it for a long time was actually illegally through Justin TV, where somebody would broadcast their channel. But you're still really, I mean, you can get MLB.com. You can pay $10 a month for that, which is actually pretty good. And then you can get Ultimate Wrestling. But other than that, you just can't get sports unless you have you have cable TV or you go to a bar.
I'd say go to the bar.
I'd say go to the bar too. It's a community activity.
So that's interesting. So it's now become here's by the way, this is pretty exciting.
This is some sports. This is a dog playing soccer.
Soccer playing dog. This is the kind of great entertainment you can get on TV.
This is more exciting than any soccer I've seen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
These guys would bounce it off their nose, it'd be much more entertaining.
I'm sorry. I've completely lost control of this.
You've
show.
Always lost
next,
control.
Next story. Yeah. Let's go to the Google Doc.
To the Google Doc. Baratunde Thurston, what is our next story?
Our next story coming up: 4chan users crash MPAA website in pro piracy protest. Is this the future of community organizing and protest?
Oh,
discuss.
Hell. Come on. First of
4chan.
All.
4chan.
First, 4chan. You know, don't say anything bad about 4chan.
I love those guys. Yeah, they're the funniest guys in the world. Yeah.
Nobody disses 4chan. I noticed that.
No, you can't take a chance.
we love 4chan.
We love you, 4chan. You are the best. Right, you guys rock.
But I have to say, I'm just going to say, that was a big story. Got a lot of attention. Can I ask you, who cares if the MPAA site is down? They're going to keep it down for a day or two. Is there anybody going there saying, oh, rats, I can't get the latest?
They've just done the world a favor.
Yeah, I mean,
it was more symbolic than anything, right?
Very symbolic.
Most protests, you know, in real life, IRL protests are symbolic, but they lead to, you know, grabbing enough attention with someone of power that they pay attention to your group.
Somebody.
Right? I mean, so I don't know if that happened probably not, but in the 4chan MPAA case. Is there a stage two other than shutting down their website, or is this just flexing, you know, your muscle for 24 or 48 hours?
Is this when they say it's the anonymous group on 4chan? Is that the same anonymous that was going after Scientology?
I don't think so.
I
didn't think it was.
They use this tool, LOIC. I can't remember. I just always think of Loic and Seismic when I see that, but I don't think he's behind
this. Poor
Loic. But it's like the low orbit something. Somebody in the chat room knows this. Anyway, there's a tool you can get off of SourceForge, and one of the comments was like, yeah, this works so well for the Scientology protests. Now we're going to, you know, take it to the MPAA and the RIAA,
right,
et cetera. Once again, I don't have no idea how effective this is.
It's a joke to use.
The low orbit ion cannon?
It's freeware. You just download it, you type in the URL and point it, and that's it. And you just start a DDoS. And if you get a few thousand people doing that, it doesn't take long before that website's not going to work.
Yeah, it's pretty trivial, really.
Yeah, you don't need to be a code kiddie to do it. You don't really need to know anything.
So I'm told that because it's just anonymous is what you're called on 4chan, unless you're one of the one in a million that says who you are on 4chan, we can't assume anything.
Right.
Well, there's also the anonymous website, which kind of spun out of that and has a whole different slew of ethics, should we say.
Like the hacker ethic.
Have any of you guys been there to the anonymous website?
Shall I? Is it dangerous?
You'd probably be looked at by the FBI later in about an hour, but
cover
go ahead. Hit it.
And is it anonymous.com?
I forget what it is, actually. Let me see.
Well, I could probably Google Anonymous. That'll really help.
Anonymous.
Jesus.
Google Anonymous.
That didn't help. Oh, here it is. Whyweprotest.net. No, that's not it.
Let me see here.
This is actually...
Somebody says there's no official anonymous website.
This is that anonymous website, which is the Scientology Anonymous. Not the most distinctive name. Who is anonymous? Why do we protest? You know, they've got the V masks, because that's what they wear.
This is bullcrap. This isn't a real site.
Remember the 5th of November.
No, so if you go to...
This looks like an Obama site.
It does. It's the Obama blue. Did you see that, by the way, that the reason Facebook is blue is because Mark Zuckerberg is colorblind and it's the only color he could see?
That's bogus.
I did read that. I'll tell you, if I could spin that to a briefly serious, super serious moment, like the idea that a site embodies the biases, abilities, and beliefs of a single individual.
One man.
Site, so powerful. Yep. 500 million people, inspired accidentally from their perspective by the limitations or beliefs or ideas of one person is truly amazing. I mean, I think it's amazing in the full sense of the word, like as a good thing, as a horrible thing, as just a big thing.
Have you ever
heard guy's limitations? That's
have you ever stunning. Heard of a one color colorblind type person? I've never heard of such a thing.
One actually, color, colorblind.
I don't know.
Somebody go to Wikipedia. Let's look this up.
So the chat room has given me the website. They say don't go to it. So I'm going to say what the website is. But folks, do not listen to me. Don't go to it because you could get in trouble. It's partyvan.info.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah. Clearly, I'm going right now.
Don't. No. No.
Be careful. You may see some things that will burn your eyes.
It burns. It burns.
Partyvan.info.
It's actually pretty boring.
That's not so bad.
It's boring. Are you criticizing it, Leo?
No, I love 4chan. God bless him.
It may look boring, but what's actually kind of scary is these are all campaigns that they're putting together.
Ah.
And what they'll do is someone will say, "All right, let's go and get this person," and they'll go on there, and people will just find everything about them from their home address to their phone number to their girlfriend, and it all is just put on the site.
So is this the site that was used? Yeah, see, it says here right now, Project Target Act. Is this the site that was used to find that woman who dumped the puppies or the kittens or whatever that was? Is this how they did that?
I'm not sure, but this was the site, I believe, that was used. It's been used for some, what was the girl in Canada?
Jessie. In fact, she's still on the front page. Yeah.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
What's it again? Party.
It's a wiki, so I guess it updates as needed.
Poor Jessie.
Yeah, so, I feel bad for her. I mean, first of all, she has crappy parents, but now they got the internet on her, too.
Yeah.
Party van. So back
But back to this theme of...
What was it again, Leo? Party van.
It's party van. Partyvan.info, John.
We're totally getting Leo in trouble right now. Leo, batten down the hatches, man, because you're going to be on the front page on that site.
No, they wouldn't go after us, would they?
No.
Have I said that I love? I love 4chan.
Well, when you're on the air, that's what you say.
Shut up, John. No, I love Party Van. God bless
him. I want to go back to this idea of technology companies, strongly influenced by a single personality.
Please,
someone in the chat room pointed out.
Please.
They're like, well, Steve Jobs is that person.
Yes.
I mean, I can't remember the name of the man who founded Real Networks.
You brought the site down,
and Amazon.
Did I really? Shut up.
We often hold up the internet and the web, its subset, as this area where anyone can make a difference and we all have a say in the future of our worlds. But if you look at Robert Moses' influence on New York City or the Rockefellers' influence on philanthropy and money, how much has the world changed in the age of the internet, which was supposed to empower anyone, when the tool that 500 million people use is still highly defined just by one person, when Apple is still heavily micromanaged by Steve Jobs? You guys have thoughts on this?
I would submit that there's a difference between Facebook and Apple. I think you have a choice whether you're going to buy or use an Apple product, right?
No.
Well, don't you have a choice whether you use Facebook?
You do, but it's not so much of a choice because all your friends are on it. There is this social compulsion component of Facebook that's a little different, I think, than Apple. And that's, I think, where it's scary that Mark has so much power. Because
it's
peer pressure
business model, yeah.
Yeah, it's more than even peer pressure. It's a reason people used AOL and couldn't leave. It's because this is where you were. This is where your friends were. Facebook, I'm convinced if something like Diaspora came along, I don't think it's going to be Diaspora, but maybe Google Me came along and offered a choice, it wouldn't be the issue that it is, but there isn't a choice right now, is there?
Well, Twitter's the closest thing, but I mean, that actually brings up something else. I got an email from Twitter today about some new updates, and this went out to their 150 million people, and they're talking about OAuth and URL wrappers and things like that. They're not reaching the mainstream audience that Facebook is, because I think it's still programmers talking to people like they're programmers.
What do you think of the new Twitter?
I love new Twitter. I blogged
I turned it off.
I linked to Gina's blog about it.
Yeah, Gina wrote a nice post on the
great post, wonderful, beautiful screenshots. I'm a fan for a couple of reasons. I think there's some shortcomings. I think there are multiple Twitter windows on your iPhone and your Android and your iPad on the web, and they don't all do the same things. Some support new retweets only. Some don't support old retweets. Some show you how many retweets you've had. Others don't. So they haven't synced the functionality across all these platforms yet. But I was
the user interface.
I love when people do beautiful things on the web and don't force you to download some proprietary platform-specific client. So I saw this as a real win for people who are fans of the web and not just the internet. People who are fans of non-apps. To like, yeah, I can use keyboard shortcuts to navigate this, like in Gmail. And that was one of the gists of Gina's posts. And I didn't even know about those.
JK works. I can't believe
that. That was a beautiful thing. So the fact that I can move nearly as swiftly and have these embedded, you know, media experiences through a web browser just reminds everybody, like, yeah, you guys are all like programming specifically and putting publishers through this burden of upgrading and sort of itemizing their development plan for platform A versus B versus Z, when we have this universal platform called the web and the internet that is capable of so much. So I thought it was an investment in a more open platform and a more open experience, and I really do applaud them for that part of it.
Gina, you wrote a great article on FastCompany.com about the new Twitter page. You agree? Why do you like it?
I love it. I think it's just a beautiful, well-executed web app that you get in your browser for all the same reasons. I think they did a really, really nice job of creating this sort of like new, I think there's this new generation of web apps that are very influenced by the iPad, actually, which is kind of ironic. The flow, being able to scroll down, the infinite scroll, the tap and expand panels, that even the screen resolution, you could tell it just was, I don't even have an iPad. I can tell that the Twitter web app worked really well on the iPad. And you know, I don't think that we've seen a really innovative web app since really Gmail and like that. And when I looked at Twitter, I was really excited about it. But you know, Alex Payne, who used to work at Twitter, is no longer there, wrote a great post which is in the show notes, and he noted, and this is something I hadn't noticed, he said that he felt like the new Twitter is great, but that there's a lot of room there for ads.
There's a lot of free space where you can put some ads.
So that's interesting. But you know, I think it really surfaces a lot of metadata that you get in tweets, the people that are mentioned, the location, the links that you know really were hidden before. And the keyboard shortcuts are awesome. Those keyboard shortcuts, I mentioned in my post that they're like Gmail. Those actually originated in VI, and that's why Gmail uses them.
Oh, no.
It's
VI, baby.
I'm not such a big fan.
The one thing that's really interesting is that the search is at the very, very top. And every time they do a redesign, the search box gets bigger and more affluent. And they're becoming a search company. I mean, they're completely...
As it should, by the way. That's the best part, isn't it?
That's the best part. Yeah. I mean, that's what you find. Where you find the
All right. I'm going to throw out a curveball then. I think it's a bad idea, because why did Twitter succeed? In fact, where Twitter's growth is happening, by the way, almost entirely now is with unsophisticated younger people. You know, look at the Video Music Awards, the VMAs last weekend, going, oh, there's a million tweets now about Lady Gaga. That's what I think. That's where most of the new traffic is. Maybe not John, but we like this new Twitter, but they're not going to like this new Twitter, you think?
I don't think they use it. I mean, I think they're using their Blackberries. A lot of, I forget where I read this, but part of the reason that you're seeing this rise of, if you want to call it, unsophisticated tweets is because it's partnerships as Twitter's done with Blackberries and Sprint and so on, where low-income people are getting Blackberries, and it comes on there, and it's like a part of the package that they get automatically. And I think that's kind of changing things a little bit.
Yeah, I actually had to change the trends that I was following from United States to San Francisco, because the trends in the United States you know, like the number one trend right now on Twitter in the United States is because I'm a gangsta.
Because we are not the majority on Twitter.
We are we used to be. We're not anymore, are we, Gina?
I mean, that happens to every community. You get, you know, it's super, it's every tech community, but probably every type of community physically as well.
Well, if you're successful, right?
On the web, you get, you know, the early tech geeks, you get the later tech geeks, you get the people who follow the later tech geeks, and then you get the population. You get the country, and in certain cases, you get the world. And you see the different languages starting to show up. Like, oh, this isn't the place that I found that it was like home. But, you know, it's because it's becoming more successful. And part of the price of success is diversification.
Do we have to get the tech early adopters to start and then they get blown away to somewhere else while the real people come in? Is that what happens?
That's what happens with every platform. I mean, you know, look at the tech people that were, I mean, with the exception of Facebook, where it was a college platform at first. But I think that's what happens with every platform. I mean, you get the nerds that go on there first.
All Twitter's doing right now to me is making me feel so out of touch. I don't know what any of these trending topics are.
And there's no reason for you to have to know.
This Larry is the one Johnson, I have a friend, interception, Te Amo Bieber, field goal.
Can you tell us why you're a gangster?
I am a gangster. Well, let's see. Okay, let me just click that, why I am a gangster, and see, because I run with sharp... Lady Gaga actually participated in this.
Well, that put that on the
trending topic. Yeah, put that on the retweeting Lady Gaga. Ando Superpants said, "I'm a gangster because I ate Kool-Aid with a spoon straight out of the pack," says Ando Superpants.
I'm a gangster because I have a dog named Pixel. What's up with that?
You are gangster. Would you tweet that, Nick Bilton?
I'll tell you what, like, Nick has a dog named, what's your cat's name, Nick?
Hip Hop, because she's got three legs and she bounces when she walks.
Hip Hop is a gangster.
I know someone who has totally a cat gangster named Pika.
Pika?
And the web designer at The Onion, her animals are...
Let me guess, Helvetica?
No, but it's M and Dash.
That's awesome.
Dot and Dash,
that's
which is
fantastic.
Beautiful.
Yeah. That is great.
Please.
M Dash.
So real quick,
that's beautiful, it's beautiful.
That's a beautiful thing.
It's a name. M Dash, I get it.
Sorry, go ahead.
Back to the Twitter redesign. One of the things that I noticed that was incredibly frustrating is with every app, like as Bartunde said, with every app and every website that Twitter puts out, it's got a different UI, and it's got to be a tremendous amount of work for them to have an Android, a BlackBerry, an iPhone, iPad, website, mobile site, as we're all trying to do these days. When is this gonna? When are we gonna narrow this down? Like, when is this gonna let up?
When is what going to let up? All the third party apps?
All the different looks and feels.
All the different interfaces. I mean, you log in through device A and you get experience, one. You log in through device B, you get experience two.
I'm sure this is why Twitter is taking this huge risk of pissing off the third party application developers who made Twitter in the first place, and saying, we'll take it from here, guys. I mean, that's got to piss them off a little bit.
Here's why I don't like the new Twitter.
Why,
it takes
John?
Up the whole screen. I don't, it throws a bunch of crap at me I don't want. I use Twitter casually. I'm not wed to Twitter like people who are on Facebook 24/7.
Well, this is
and
what
that's
I'm
what this
saying.
Says to me.
This is what I'm saying. This is a little, and I'm sure Twitter, Evan Biz know this. It's a little bit of a risk to take something that really succeeded because of its plain simplicity. And make it so complex. And I think that they may have been listening a little bit more to the geeks like us about design and content than they ought to have. But we'll see. We'll see. I've been wrong about Twitter before.
I mean, the good news is you don't even have to expand the panel for Twitter to be useful. You can just look at the left column and you still get that plain list of tweets that you always got.
Right. I guess that they did that nicely. Something. Yeah, you're right.
They did kill my wallpaper, though. I had to, vastly simplify that because I have about 30... to 60 pixels of space left on my laptop screen to see non-tweet data and imagery. So
that's why my wallpaper is now and has always been since day one on Twitter just a lawn. It's just a lawn. So I could say, get off my lawn.
So if I could, Leo, let me know if you mind if I do that. I'd like to skip to the next tech story.
I'll tell you what. Why don't we hold on for a moment so I can do a commercial? What is the next tech story going to be, Baratunde Thurston?
We're going to talk about the new Justin TV app.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this, but we are on Justin TV, and I know Nick wrote an article on it.
Yeah, I think Nick will have some fun things to say about
all
this.
All right. I'm very interested what's going to happen, especially since YouTube this week tested streaming as well. Video streaming is going to, and something we've been doing for a couple of years now, is suddenly going to be, I think, a very big deal.
Yeah.
But before we do that, ladies and gentlemen, I'd certainly like to talk about my friends at Carbonite and Carbonite Pro.
You do backup? You do backup, don't you? If you're a business, this kind of stuns me. How many businesses, small businesses, do not back up their data? If you're a business, think about what it would mean if all your data, all your computers got lost, all your data was gone. How long would it take you to get back online? A mighty long time. You might even be out of business by the time everything got rebuilt. Where are you going to get that from? The paper spreadsheets? This is why I think it's so important to have a good backup strategy. And a good backup strategy has to have a couple of very important features. One, I think it's got to be automatic. If you're not backing up automatically, it's not going to happen. You can't trust your employees to always do those backups. If you are not backing up in the cloud, you're running a risk. Because what if the business burns down? Carbonite's been used, in fact, by a lot of businesses because it's an online automatic backup system that's very reliable. Windows and Mac, 128-bit SSL, so it's, even on an open access point, it's secure. Plus, they have AES 256-bit encryption. In fact, what happened is Carbonite found out that several hundred thousand of its consumer users were small businesses. And they said, well, maybe we ought to do something for business. That's where Carbonite Pro came from. Carbonite Pro, right now for Windows only. It is a truly amazing solution, which we use here. We looked at all the other ways of doing offsite backup. There was nothing more affordable, more effective, or easier to use than Carbonite Pro. I'm very happy to say. You pay only for the storage you need. You don't pay for seats. You can have as many users as you want. I'll give you, it starts at $10 a month. That gives you 20 gigabytes of storage. If you've got, let's say you've got 8 desktops in your office, small business like mine, 8 desktops, each storing about, 5 gigabytes worth of storage. That's $25 a month. Automatic backup. There's no individual licensing fee. There's no setup fee. There's no hardware to buy, no training. You go around, you put it on all the computers, they start backing up. From then on, users can restore their own files if you set it up that way. I like that feature. It's just simple. You have a centralized dashboard so you know exactly which computers are backed up. Works for Windows XP, Vista, Windows 7, 32-bit, and 64-bit, Windows Server 2003, 2008 as well. And I just think this is a great solution. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to CarbonitePro.com. I'm a big supporter of Carbonite. They just got named the fastest-growing IT services company in the U.S. for this year. The 9th fastest overall, privately held companies overall in the U.S. And there's a reason. It's good. CarbonitePro.com. Give it a try today. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech.
Well, what happened to John?
Oh, he went out to try to convince Twitter to change to the old. Oh, wait a minute. Here he comes.
I love the idea that he would do that. He just gets in his car.
I got to go get my car. Go to Twitter.
Driving to Soma.
Driving out of here.
I'm going to Twitter.
God, what is that in your hand?
The new interface.
He got himself a fine, what is that, an IP? A screwdriver. What are you doing there? What are you doing? Stop it. Put that down. you guys, looks like a fine IPA beer there.
Yeah.
That's good.
I had to come to the college.
Wait a minute. Weren't we going to open up that Leoville?
Too late now.
All right, have a beer.
Yeah, you guys talked about
Gina,
Leoville last.
We were going to give you cupcakes for your birthday, Gina. I don't know what happened.
So sorry.
Oh, man.
My house in the cloud. It doesn't, the street address,
Isn't that funny? Tomorrow? She doesn't have a street address.
Send her this.
Is that in Lifehacker? Is that a thing that you set up, no, I don't have a street address. I don't need
internet personality, personal mailbox, no Sunday delivery. Sorry,
I never give out my street address. I have a mailbox with this company called Earth Class Mail where you send all your stuff and
they
scan
smart.
It. So you can log in from anywhere in the world and see the outside of the envelope, tell them to scan it, tell them to recycle it, tell them to shred it. And so
I trust Leo. I would totally give Leo my street address if I had one. I really don't.
I think you're making a mistake there, Gina, because I would, in fact, stalk you.
Yeah, I would be careful.
And I actually do have a home, though, so I don't
know. Leo's my man.
I'll be honest with you. We give out the address. There's people sitting here right now. I don't know where. There's some people from Spain. There's some people from all over.
There's two people from the CIA sitting over here.
CIA sitting over here. And there's some 4chan guys picketing out front. So
Jesus.
I live without fear. I feel that is...
You know, I give out my street address. I have a three-legged cat named Hip Hop who's packing heat because I'm a gangster.
So. He's a gangster.
He's going to get a laugh with that three-legged cat thing if it's the last thing he does.
You know, he hops because he only has three legs.
So he hops.
I'm getting it, yeah.
Yeah. Get it?
Uh-huh.
He's going, so, wait a minute. We just mixed it. Go do that some more, Nick. You were dancing. And we missed it.
I was
hopping.
He
was. There he goes.
Because I'm a gangster. That's just how I roll.
Gangsta.
Gangster.
All right, so back to the Justin TV story.
Yes. So you guys all familiar with how it all started? I'm sure, right?
Yeah. In fact, we're on Justin TV right now. If you go to live.twit.tv, while we use three different services, the front page is justin.tv.
I was wondering how the cat lost its leg.
Oh, stop it.
It was born that way, John. It had an accident with a screwdriver. So
it's actually like these differently abled jelly beans I have here. The belly flops, they call them. Are you doing dental work on the show? Should never. So Nick, it started with some guy. Was it Justin? He was like, he wore a camera all the time.
Yeah, he used to wear the camera constantly.
He used to have a Sony laptop in his, one of those super thin ones in his backpack. Right. And then he had a little camera on his hat and he videotaped everything and some pretty mundane things that you probably wouldn't want to watch. And then there was the pranks too, when people were trying to mess with him and they sent parties to the cops to a party and things like that. But then what's happened really recently, which is fascinating with Justin TV, is they've been trying to fight piracy. And what you have is, because there's no live TV on the web yet, and it's still, everyone's still working that out, is that people will stream, you know, the VMAs and the Emmys and sports shows, and it's become almost like a game of whack-a-mole for the Justin TV guys, where they have to try to put these shows out before they rise
really?
Up.
Really? I don't want to interrupt you, but that reminds me, I think there was some guy, I can't remember who it was, but he was at one of the Apple announcements, and mm-hmm. he had his laptop, and he was, like, shooting pictures of the Apple announcement, and the next thing you know, they threw him out.
They did not throw me out.
Oh, it's you.
And it wasn't illegal. There was nobody said not to do it. There's no sign that didn't
You've
say
You've been blackballed.
That said, well, there was no. There were cameras. There was a row of cameras behind me doing it. So I thought, well, what the hell? And I opened my laptop, and now I can't get invited to an Apple event to save my life.
Huh.
Who cares? Go ahead, Nick. Forget it.
Send Steve Jobs some cupcakes. Maybe that'll solve it.
No.
I think it would be solved by Nick getting on the case and writing it up in the New York Times.
Steve is an Aeritarian. He only eats air. He doesn't eat food.
So now we have the Justin TV mobile app. So they launched the Android app, I think about a month ago, and they finally launched the iPhone app. And they're really trying to encourage people to broadcast live. But
Nick, doesn't everybody do this? Doesn't Ustream do this? Everybody does this, right?
Yeah, they do. I think what Justin TV is trying to take advantage of is the current community they have, right? So people like you
Wait a minute. Look, there we are on the front page. Look who's on the front page. It's Nick Bilton. Nick Bilton talking
about... Put the camera back on me.
That's cool, Nick. You're a star. Looks just like you.
What you say you are? I get to try it.
What this is?
Keep a jean on at least. Put a pretty face on.
Yeah, nobody's gonna. I'll be honest with you. Okay, here's the things you can choose from: Mud Truck TV, Funkwares, Project Leet, X4I USI, or Nick.
Who just says Twit underneath. It's a picture of Nick. Nick, sue him.
Nick, I really, if I were you, I would use that as your avatar, including the Twit part.
Twit.
Right there. That looks good.
That's terrible.
That's it. I'm going to do it for a week on the new Twitter.
I'm sorry. We've been really, really rude to you and Baratunde.
Of course.
So go ahead and please continue.
The thing that's interesting. So, okay. So they, you know, people have been doing this Ustream and so on. And, you know, we've seen Scoble run around with cameras streaming everything, birthday parties, tech events. But I think the thing that Justin's trying to take advantage of is the community. But what I think is really fascinating is it's going to bring up a whole slew of copyright questions as more companies do this. Because let's just say that, of course, I can't stream directly the VMAs, but let's just say that Baratunde is standing next to my TV and the VMAs are on. What's the rule there?
This has come up in a number of situations. Shot. Remember, athletes were instructed during the Olympics, the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, to be very careful about tweeting results. It's certainly not streaming video, even from behind the scenes, because the rights to this had been sold. And even a Justin TV backstage stream is an infringement.
Yep.
I think, you know, you ask me, fantastic. It breaks down the it breaks down the whole CD structure of, you know, backroom deals. It opens up everything to the public. It's a breath of fresh air. And this is why I love doing what we do. Now, do you think Justin will be shut down by people who don't like it, that this ability to stream via phone is in everybody's pocket?
I don't know. It's a great question. I mean, it brings up so many interesting questions around. I mean, one of the things with you know, I have a chapter in my book about the, you know, like the next 10 years. And I went out and I spoke to all these cyborgs. And I said, you know, and these are people that are literally
recording.
Could
you clarify that?
Cyborg?
Cyborgs.
You spoke to cyborgs?
We do not like to be called cyborgs.
Didn't kill them?
We prefer little people.
Who are cyborgs? People walking around with cameras on their head?
Yes. Steve Mann, for example.
A T-888 or a T-1000? Like, what does that mean?
T-1000.
Like a real deal cyborg. So you've got, like, so Steve Mann, right? So he's got, he records, he's got these glasses that record everything. He's got, like, wires plugged into his head. He's got a little computer.
You know what the problem, though, Nick? I got to tell you, that's boring, as we learned from Justin.
Yeah, Justin's moved on.
Well, the thing that freaked me out about the whole encounter with Steve was that I was being recorded, right? And the only way to not be recorded was to run in the other direction.
Right. So well, that's interesting.
You can punch him out.
No, that's interesting.
Although, then that would be recorded.
If somebody will point out.
Give him one to the groin before he does anything, and then you can deny all.
We have viewers in England who point out that you can't walk downtown in London without being recorded in multiple cameras.
Yeah, the CCTVs over there.
Everywhere.
Yeah, they're all over New York, too.
Welcome to the modern world. You know, I mean, we've seen movies where there's a guy watching every street corner. I think that that's just, you know, that's practically here. But you're right. I mean, if I walk in the room, as I have, by the way, I've done this, Nick. Not as a cyborg, but to cover stuff. I walk in the room with cameras in there. You definitely get a mix of reactions.
Oh, yeah. I try to interview people with a video camera certain times, and they, you know, they get freaked out. But with a tape recorder, they're fine. But, you know, maybe that's generational. It'll change in the next few years. But I think what's scary for me, and I'm, you know, I'm all for the internet in the future, and I'm extremely positive about everything, as I've written in my book and on the Times blog. But the fact that you can't delete that once I spoke to Steve Mann, that was it. It was there that I spoke to him. There was no way for me to take that away. Don't speak to him anymore. Exactly. But now when you get these Justin TV apps and things like that, I think it brings up interesting questions. Like, can I call up Justin TV and said, hey, I showed up on one of your cameras. Can you take me off? No. You know, it's there.
Google does that. They'll let you take expurgate certain things that they've recorded by their Beatles.
Once you walk around in the world with a camera and a light and a tripod and a staff and you visit people with this thing, you really see. I went backstage with a camera like this at Dignation at South by Southwest this past spring, and it is very interesting to see. And these are media savvy young people, to see the reaction. The security guard really hated it.
Oh, I bet he did.
He really hated
it. He was moonlighting. He probably wasn't allowed to.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't think of that.
That's why they don't let you record stuff in Vegas. Drop into one of the casinos and wander around.
Oh,
with
yeah,
one
you
of those
can't
gears.
Do that. Yeah, and you learn very quickly what you can do and what you can't do.
What happens in Vegas is supposed to stay there, but not with live streaming.
Right.
Yeah.
It goes
everywhere. Yeah, the Chargers game was blacked out here in San Diego, and people were really upset this weekend. And one of the things that the local news actually recommended was, like, pointing a Skype video camera at the game.
What?
The people where it wasn't
really
blacked out. Yeah, yeah. Like, on the local news, they were like, well, you know, if you know, because it was blacked out within a 75-mile radius. So it's like, if you know somebody in the outer county, have them turn on the game and then point their eyesight at the game and Skype them.
That's
so you can
awesome.
Watch it. Isn't that so funny? And I think sites like Justin TV kind of let people do the same thing, you know, for sports events and blacked out content. And I suppose in the case of Justin TV, it's easy to get that stuff pulled, right? But in a case of like a Skype, a private Skype video call.
You can't.
You know,
I tell you, you go to a rock concert these days and everybody's got their phone held up, either playing the music to their friends, which can't sound very good. Or video.
Neither can the video can't look very good either.
But we're getting better and better. It's hard. I mean, look at this iPhone 4 probably does pretty good video and streams pretty well on Justin TV. I think we're getting, you know, high def. We're getting very close to high def in everybody's pocket all the time.
Have you seen the video, by the way, of Walt Mossberg playing chat roulette as a puppet?
Yeah.
Nope. I managed to miss that.
Just wondering.
It's not the Walt Mossberg.
Oh, it's the puppet.
It's Walt Moss puppet. There is a difference. That's Brian Hogg, who actually does a parody.
Oh, I thought that was Walt Mossberg, to be honest about it.
Really? Did you really?
Uh-huh.
You've seen my puppet.
Yeah, you got a puppet back there. Yeah,
I have a puppet.
Yeah.
That same guy, Brian. Brian built that one.
That puppet looks a lot like Scoble.
Nick, I mean, this is obviously what's happening.
Yes.
And I think that it's one of those things that, I'll tell you what, I have a really interesting challenge with this show. Last week, for instance, we were talking about Tina Fey and Justin Bieber. And it's a news show. I ran a small clip from Saturday Night Live off YouTube of Tina Fey and Justin Bieber. We posted that show on YouTube this week, and it was pulled. YouTube's automatic content discovery system flagged it as a copyright violation.
It's fair use.
I believe it's fair use. There is, in fact, we have an article, if you look on the rundown about this. There is a process, but it's, you know, it's not a very good process. We've talked to our lawyers. I don't know exactly what to do about it.
How many lawyers do you have?
Well, so here's this is a perfect segue, Leo, to another story in our queue.
Hooray.
From codinghorrors.com.
That's it.
We have a great story about, the title is YouTube versus Fair Use.
Yep.
And essentially, you know, this blogger did a really interesting job of sort of documenting when YouTube, you know, got popular, a lot of it was on the backs of copyrighted material. And they said, look, we have a lot of legitimate material as well, so you can't shut us down completely. But they also promised to copyright holders that they would be working on a solution.
And they did.
And they released a system called Content ID, which allows them to very quickly identify via audio or video or both when someone else's work is being uploaded by a random user. And then the publisher has the choice of, you know, block it altogether, track it to just get usage stats, or to monetize it. But this writer who was, I can't get his name off the site, she's a Coding Horrors, Jeff Atwood.
Yeah, Gina
Jeff Atwood's writing in detail about, you know, first of all, he didn't think they could actually build it. He thought that they were just as like a delay tactic for the courts to be like, yeah, we'll monitor this. We'll give you reports, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. But it turns out that it works. And so within an hour of posting something, you'll find, you know, as a YouTube user, that they flagged your stuff and have warned you that you need to take this down. So, and you found that out, Leo. I mean, you got, you know, we talked about this with The Onion a couple of months ago.
That's right. Same thing happened with The Onion. And that wasn't your clips. That wasn't your choice. That wasn't The Onion's choice, right?
And we didn't, you know, we weren't, you know, it's a YouTube system where they've said, we're going to go out of our way to be friendly to copyright holders and send warnings to users. And hopefully they'll meet in the middle somewhere that isn't too onerous. But like, you know, Gina, you're this week in Google. Like, what do you think about the fair use versus YouTube? I mean, YouTube is supposed to liberate all of us, but also seems to be shackling us with maybe a mild bit of overreach in terms of the fair use implications of clipping audio and video.
I'm kind of amazed that they actually made the system that does this so quickly.
Well, remember Napster? Napster was told by the courts, this goes way back to Napster. They were told by the court, you need to come up with a way to flag copyrighted content. And Napster's defense was, it can't be done. YouTube's done it.
But of course, Google did it. Yep. Right. So, when you file the dispute, how long is the response to the dispute?
I don't know, because we haven't heard yet.
Okay.
The Onion thing, so here's the deal. The content flagging happens automatically.
Right.
That's just done. And then, as you said, Baratunde, the copyright holders have three choices. I don't think the one with The Onion was pulled down. Was it, John? I don't think that one was pulled down.
We wouldn't set, you know, and for those who are just tuning in, we didn't get this, but so my job there is as web editor, digital dude. So in theory, I'm supposed to know about these things, but there's a lot of stuff that happens in the world. But in general, we wouldn't have a default setting of like block you from citing us. Like,
no, it's just really good publicity. I ran a short
Origins of The Onion is not to like stop people from talking about us. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well,
so,
and it drives traffic.
To track or to monetize.
So in that case, it wasn't. Obviously, NBC has a blanket setting saying, yank it. And we got yanked immediately. I don't know if we've appealed. I think my attitude is I want to appeal as a news organization. And now, maybe there's some debate over what a news organization can do. In this Coding Horror blog, he does talk about the three tests for fair use, all of which I believe we satisfy.
Why don't you read them so people know?
Do you have them in front of you, Baratunde? Because I don't.
Yeah, he asked four questions. I have them.
Okay.
Is the use transformative? Is the source material intended for the public good? how much was taken, and what's the market effect? Those are the four questions that, Jeff Atwood, this programmer, outlines.
You have to meet one or four.
I'm sorry?
Do you have to meet one or four?
He says four guidelines, so I think all four.
The court would look at those, and would say, was the use transformative in the sense that we change it in a way so that it's not the same?
No, I think transformative in this case, because I've heard this lecture a million times, it means that you're using it for a different purpose. You've transformed the reason for its use. In other words, you're mocking it or just something.
Or we're doing news coverage.
You're not merely rebroadcasting.
Got it. And that was the case. We were talking about Justin Bieber's fame. We used a small clip. There was certainly no damage to the value of that clip.
So what was number two again?
Is the source material intended for the public good?
And so
it's a news show.
Even if it's humor. Humor is the public good, so you can make fun of something.
So I think it's pretty clear we satisfy those tests
of
fair use.
What was number three?
How much was taken?
You didn't take much. You took, nothing, actually. And then the last one was, I'm sorry?
What's the market effect?
It would be beneficial.
Beneficial, if anything.
Yeah. So, you may have met all four.
Now, but a judge would say that. My lawyer says that. But how do I get YouTube to say it? You can't.
It's automated.
It's a
robot.
It's a robot. It's a form.
It's a robot with a feedback mechanism that, Jeff Atwood, he contested this on at least bases 3 and 4 and found that the copyright owner rejected it without explanation.
Right. They don't. You'd have to take them to court.
Final say.
You'd have to take them to court.
File a dispute claim. I guess my issue is is the dispute resolved as quickly as the content is flagged or nearly as quickly? And that can't possibly be because obviously humans are involved.
Well, we have actual damages because that video was the Twitch show from last week was taken off of YouTube. Not aired on YouTube. That's tens of thousands.
Because of the SNL clip.
Yeah. And that's tens of thousands of views that we've lost.
So it's like a 2-hour show, and for 5 seconds, you got pulled, basically. That's crazy.
And that's Atwood's point. He's like, look, I wanted to quote this movie in a blog post about a whole bunch of things. It's not my intention to rebroadcast the film. I'm not trying to damage sales of the film. And, as a media personality, as a journalistic function, even if you're not a journalist, you're performing a journalistic function, that should be allowed. And so his fear was like, wow, YouTube built this thing, and it actually works really, really well, and that has frightening implications.
Larry Lessig has talked about a pendulum swing with copyright holders, and certainly it's swung very much in favor of copyright holders.
And it's not swinging back that I can see.
Well, ironically, the technology has swung, and this is the Justin TV story, has swung very much in the favor of public, because the law is supporting and YouTube's technology is supporting the copyright holders. But frankly, the fact that I can post you tweet everywhere and it's whack-a-mole to keep it down. In the long run, technologies are on our side. So it's a very interesting situation.
It's also ironic, as Bartender said, when YouTube was sold, I mean, there was I can't remember. It was in the 20s or 30s of other video services that were out there at the time. And what actually put YouTube, and I've heard this from several people that were inside the company at the time, what put them on the map was the SNL clip from
Dick in a Box.
Yeah. No, it was the cupcake one. It was
cupcakes. The Magnolia Cafe.
That's right. One. That's right.
It got 5 million views on YouTube, and they literally said if that video hadn't have happened, there was absolutely no way that they would have been as big as at the time as they were. So it's the irony is quite striking.
Palpable, I would believe.
Palpable.
That's what today.
I can taste it.
I can taste it.
Talk about tasting it, by the way. This coffee maker that I was ridiculing makes a heck of a good cup of coffee.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Last week at 175 degrees.
Yeah, with a plunger.
Yeah. It's astonishing.
You saw that, Baratunde.
I didn't see it. I listened to it as I was walking around New York.
It's delicious.
So you actually listened to this show?
Yeah, I listened. So
everybody does, Leo.
Debbie Steer, who works at HarperCollins and is the editor for my book, she posted this on our Tumblr, but I actually listened to Twit in 2x on my iPhone.
Yeah, that's the way to listen. We intentionally make this show take twice as long as it ought to.
I'm just like, I don't have necessarily 2 hours, but Apple does a pretty good job of of doubling the speed without destroying the pitch of everybody's voice.
Baratunde, this commercial is for you.
Well, I never re-listen to the ones that I've been on because that's just weird.
Yeah, I know. I don't either. Which means I never listen. We're going to take a little break, and then it's Talk Like a Pirate Day. So I'm going to ask each of you to say "arr." Gina makes a little fist. Is that a pirate fist?
Yes, it's a pirate fist.
Right. Gina, do they have pirates in the clouds?
They do, floating by on these giant pirate ships.
That's where they all are now. That's where they all are.
Taking down the MPAA site as they go by.
Yes. Have I said recently how much I love 4chan? Love them. And I also love my Ford Mustang with the great Ford sink in it. And if you're looking for a very reasonable priced car that's cute, fun to drive, gets great gas mileage, has the Ford sink in it, I got to tell you, there goes John. It was good you did that quickly enough. And actually, as you say that, I'm going to change the lower third because it says DERV 1 today. And I don't mean it to be DERV 1. I mean it to be DRIVE 1 today. There you go. You could DERV it. You will love it so much you'll want to DERV it. The Ford Fiesta. Take a look at it at your local Ford dealer. The new 2011 just came out. And EPA estimated 40 miles to gallon on the highway. No other compact car is more fuel efficient than the 2011 Ford Fiesta, according to the EPA. It's that great 1.6-liter Duratec TI VCT i4 engine. It's peppy. It's fun to drive. It has things like my Mustang has this, too, and I love it. The easy fuel capless filter system, so I never have to open the car. I just pop open the thing, and boom, put the gas in, bump, close it. The 4-inch multifunctional display with LCD screen, and that's where the sync is, which means you can talk to your Ford. You can tell it to play a podcast. Play Twit 266. It plays it for you. You can check the weather, movie listings. Get turn-by-turn voice directions without having to purchase additional hardware. 911 Assist is great, too. It'll automatically, if the airbags are deployed, call 911 and feed it your GPS coordinates. This is kind of weird, but it happened to me. When the first time it happened to me, it was strange. I have the new Droid X, and on many Droid phones, it will read you your text messages. So a little alarm goes off, and then in a very nice female voice, my text messages are read to me, which is a little weird, but okay, great. Exterior design that it just looks, well, you can see the image on the screen. It's just so cute, very kinetic, feels great. Interior that looks cool, has great features, including optional heated leather trim seats, the power shift 6-speed automatic transmission, intelligent access with a push-button start, which is great. I want you to take a look at the new Ford Fiesta. It is a hot car. I just really love it. I just love what Ford's doing. They have really brought the pride back to Detroit. Drive one today, the new Ford Fiesta, at a dealer near you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, John C. DeVore.
Make it look like a wipe.
It was a wipe.
Yeah.
I should have switched when you did that, and it would look just like a wipe.
Yeah. So I have...
John. This is the first time we've actually met, and I was warned. I heard that you were somewhat of a curmudgeon, but I have to say you're a really nice, lovable guy.
I am. It's a known fact.
Did people warn? No, seriously, Nick. People warned you. Watch out for John.
He's going to kill you.
They said, "Oh, he's a grumpy one. Be careful."
Really?
You know, yeah. Especially work for the New York Times. I have a grudge. I got to bring something up about the Ford thing, since you were still. They don't want to belabor the commercial. But your car is parked out there, that hot red
pretty?
Mustang.
Oh, I love
it.
It
looks
Mustang.
Like a car that, no offense, Leo, I don't want to be mean about this, but this looks like a car that, what just happens when guys get older and then they get the young girlfriend and the Ferrari and this, you look like a guy going through a middle age, what's that called?
The crisis.
He looks like a crisis. I'm telling you, stop embarrassing yourself and get a Fiesta.
I probably should.
Seriously.
Is that what you get after the midlife crisis? What do you
Fiesta
drive, John? Just out of curiosity.
It's the same Lexus I've always had. But it's beside the point. If I was going to buy a Ford right now, I'd buy that Fiesta.
I would too.
That's a cute car.
You know, I'm going to test drive.
And it's better for older people.
Wow. Tough crowd. I was about to say that John's crankiness was refreshing, but no, not so much.
No, not so refreshing.
I'm just trying to get Leo so he doesn't, you know, make himself look
doesn't
like
embarrass
a,
himself.
You know, he's probably listening into rap music as he drives around that
actually.
Thing.
How'd you know?
Leo, I bet you look damn good in that car.
Thank you, Gina. Now all I need is a young girlfriend and I'll be set.
One of the best things I've ever done in my life, I rented a Dodge Shelby from Hertz.
Oh, and isn't that fun?
They have a limited number of rental centers that will
rent out these sports cars. It was a special occasion, and I had this car, and I drove it.
Isn't it
and
fun?
It was beautiful. Yeah. So I recommend everybody be irresponsible financially and do that once.
You know, in fact, before I bought the Mustang, I did that.
You're going to get a Ferrari. I heard
I
that.
Would like to get a musty shellback.
Musty shellback. I'd like to get a musty shellback, too. I'm telling you, I need something to... My back is killing
shellbang.
Me.
No, I mean a Shelby Mustang. The 2011, I took a. They took me on the test track at Ford with the 2011
Why don't you
Shelby.
Get that and end it all?
That really is a midlife. I say it's not a midlife crisis, John. It's a second childhood.
GT40 is another opportunity for you.
Yeah, the GT is nice. They still make those? So
no, they got the new one. They just came out with the new version of that old car.
They did?
It's hot looking.
Yeah, it's a... I think I said Dodge Shelby. I meant Ford Shelby.
I know what you meant.
No, but you got
Dodge.
The GT40 that is the hot rocket.
They made it again?
Yeah, it's a brand new version. It's a 2010, I think.
Oh, John. Speaking of... this is my next car.
Yeah, there you go.
Talk about a midlife crisis. Holy camoli, that's beautiful.
Did you... speaking of things that... that you can actually touch. Did you guys see the article in the Times today or on the Times today about Netflix feeding Blockbuster with clicks, Woo! Not bricks?
No, what happened?
Oh, it's just interesting about how Blockbuster really could have owned this video space. I mean, they really had it.
Yeah.
And they went after DVDs and people walking to stores and blew it.
Bye-bye.
And I think what's really even more fascinating that I haven't really heard anyone discuss is I believe that Netflix is going to be the next kind of cable distributor to a certain degree. They're going to replace
Absolutely.
Your cable company.
They're going to do a la carte.
They've cut interesting deals. I mean, looking at the Guild, and I was on a few weeks/months ago.
You were on the Guild?
No, I wasn't on the Guild. I was on Twitch.
He was watching the Guild.
Oh, yeah.
With
Felicia.
With Felicia Day.
Yeah.
But watching, I mean, their strategy is really interesting. They've got, you know, interesting release windows. Through podcasts, through the web,
right.
Through Xbox, through Netflix. Netflix is certainly such a prime distributor of sort of
I think they're going to run
content.
Into trouble. I'll be honest with you. You're right. It's clear because they bought Epix for almost $1 billion. They're really moving in this into
or,
this.
Or access to the Epix catalog.
Access. They didn't buy Epix. I'm sorry. You're exactly right. So even then, $1 billion is even more kind of stunning. Right. They're clearly moving towards doing more instant watch movies and fewer DVDs.
But, yeah, that's the only thing I pay for is the Instant Watch. Nine a month.
Me too. I barely.
That was the $1 billion transaction that they did a few weeks ago.
Right.
They even said it. You know, we're replacing the money we spend on DVDs in the mail and replacing it with servers and clicks.
But I think there's a challenge ahead for them because for a couple of reasons. Now, Hollywood may like this because streaming movies can't be easily pirated, whereas DVDs can. So they're probably promoting streaming. But I can tell you who hates this idea is the internet service providers, especially since they're also, in most cases, in the TV movie business. I'm saying Comcast, to a lesser degree Verizon, AT&T with U-verse. They also want to sell movies to you. And so I think that they are actually, they're not going to be very happy about this. And I see a flaming war coming between the internet service.
Flame war.
Call out the lull squad. Call out 4chan. Between, let's just say, Comcast and Netflix. And this is why the net neutrality battle becomes very important.
Oh, yes.
Now, Google's going to, Google, you know, it was interesting that they did this deal with Verizon because I think they also, with Google TV, really think that streaming TV is the future and a la carte TV and not, you know, cable.
I think that the next generation of kids they don't think about time slots. They think about
right.
URLs.
Absolutely, like absolutely. TiVo started that because yeah. when I was
I'm sorry. Can I just pause for like? Can we have a great soundbite moment?
Yes.
the kids they don't think about time slots. They think about URLs.
Them kids. Them crazy kids.
You're right. That's a very apt thing to say. I think he's absolutely right.
Well, and it's interesting. I wrote about when Conan was doing his, you know, he was trying to get a network. his audience doesn't. They don't even know what time he goes on or what
they
show
don't care.
It is.
They
watch
right. it
on he's the not internet. On. Maybe that's the reason.
Used to be when I was growing up, you'd watch a show, right? Remember that, Uncle John? You did.
Yeah, when I was a kid,
Ed Sullivan would come
we
on.
We used to hit the rock
Sunday
and
night.
And the way the spark flew is when the show was on
Sunday night. Everybody watched when I was a kid, so we'd watch Disney. Grown-ups would all watch Ed Sullivan.
I watched the Mickey Mouse Club.
And what you lose is that sense of national, event when the Beatles play Ed Sullivan, for instance. But the truth is, I think TiVo started that, where people realized we don't have to sit down in front of a TV at any particular time.
Time switching.
Time shifting.
Shifting.
Time shifting.
And this actually goes to another point, which I wanted to point out earlier about the Apple TV and your cable television and so on. You know, Steve Jobs stood up on stage when he presented the Apple TV and said, you know, customers only want, Hollywood professional content. They don't want amateur hour, which is not true. The numbers show that people are actually consuming billions of videos on YouTube and Facebook every month that are created by people using their mobile phone. And I think that same concept of like not having a time slot with the things that your friends create and your loved ones and so on. And then trying to put a time slot on this Hollywood content is just
But now here's the irony. Here's the irony. I'm moving in the opposite direction. We started doing podcasts, which
isn't
you would download
weird?
Whenever
you find
you wanted.
That peculiar, don't you?
Yeah, whenever you wanted. And now I think the problem with podcasts and all of this downloadable content is it's too hard to get. You have to figure out where it is. Mm. You have to subscribe. You have to download it. You have to find a device to put it onto, and it's way too complicated. So we started doing real time live streaming. Because we thought it was easier to go to a website
it
and
is.
Just push the button and it's on.
But numbers. Give
numbers
us the
are
numbers.
Much, much lower for live.
Okay,
but I think
so
that,
then, so your point, you made the opposite point.
Well, right now. But I think in the long run, live is easier.
Live works for certain things and then live doesn't for others. I mean,
we're still a URL. I mean, we're not, you know, we're still a URL. So it's,
news shows are just different. News shows are different. You want those live. You want sports events and news shows streaming live. And like the idea that people would turn on twit.tv, you know, at their desk during the workday is totally makes complete sense. And I'm sure the live streaming numbers are going up, right? I mean, is that the trend?
Oh,
lately?
Absolutely.
You know, less?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that
yeah, but that way, right, the downloads are going up too. Come on.
Everything's going up.
Yeah, everything is going up.
So
it's literally, the web is dead nonsense. If you look at the numbers, every
huge.
Single thing is going up. Yeah.
No, and in fact, what we really want to do is make it available in every form. It's like not like we'd give up the downloadable version. We want to give you any form you want. But I do think, and I think this may be a little bit of a backlash to downloadable content, is that people also want live. They want a community.
It's the interaction.
The community part is big. I mean, I'll tell you, like, the Twit app is, and not to just, you know, be nice to you because I'm here right now, but I got the Twit iPhone app, and it's pretty amazing. Like, you log into it, and you see the schedule, the day parting, if you will, of all your content. And I'm like, oh, it's 2:30 p.m., and so this show is on.
Yeah.
And the audio immediately kicks in, and there's a way to jump in the chat room and hear what people are saying. And there is something about that.
It's a
water cooler connection that solo, you know, podcast listening and viewing doesn't provide. You know,
well, so now that you mentioned
this,
people
like to be connected to other people. Yeah,
I would like to do a morning show, and I would love you to be. I want to hire you, Baratunde.
Do it in New York.
I want to do it in New York.
Yeah, Baratunde morning.
And I want
Baratunde
to host it.
Sunday.
Come on, Monday
Sunday,
through Friday.
Monster truck rally.
So here's my idea, Baratunde. We create a special app that's an alarm clock app / Twit Morning Show app. And so when people on their phone, they use it for their alarm clock.
And it scares the crap out of them when they see Baratunde.
It wakes them up. And there's this black guy in bed with him. It's great.
Oh, Brooklyn's here.
I just think it's a great, it's the next alarm clock is, and your friends are on and they're live and you're waking up to them. What do you think, Baratunde?
Come on.
Baratunde in the morning.
This guy's rolling in dough.
I'll get you a jingle. I'll get you a jingle. You'll have your own jingle.
Are you pitching me a show?
I am totally pitching you.
By the way, the fact is that
Baratunde in the morning.
In the morning. There you go. In the morning.
In the morning.
You got it.
I got a jingle. I got a jingle for you.
I make the jingle. You don't make the jingle.
No, here's the jingle. I already got it.
And special guest, insert name here.
How do you like it?
You got to change your
if
name
I get
to insert.
Name here. That'll be my
It'll be Baratunde every day. Come on.
Every day is Baratunde.
Oh!
No, that was really so. For my birthday, so Gina's birthday is my birthday is the 11th of September.
Yeah,
and
Virgo.
Some good friends, including Nick, tried to make Baratoon Day a trending topic on Twitter.
Yeah,
Baratoon Day,
which is nearly impossible. Yeah. But it was beautiful.
You know, I think he could handle a morning show. He's got the right personality.
Oh, he's totally the guy. I know.
Well, why don't we just get?
I've been lobbying him. Secretly, he doesn't know it, but I've been lobbying him for a year.
By the way, Leo is rolling in dough, so you should take advantage of it before he self-destructs.
So you know, I feel like I'm at an amazing moment in my career right now.
This is the perfect time.
This is a turning point.
How about we do this? How about we go to the next tech story?
Okay, how about this?
Oh, he's pulling a Dvorak.
Get ready for this.
Dvorak.
So Intel, Engadget caught this, and it's kind of a stunner. If you buy a Pentium-based G6951 processor-based machine at a Best Buy, there is a card next to the computer, a $50 card that unlocks extra threads and cache on your processor. You buy the computer, you don't pay the $50, you don't get the extra threads.
Why don't you steal the card?
You can't. It's
that
not...
is such BS. So you're basically paying to not even overclock your machine.
No.
Clock your machine at the point at which it's supposed to or it's intended to perform. That's insane.
It's a gateway computer. It says the card is,
first of all, did you say they still make computers?
Gateway? Yeah, right. Gateway still
Gateway
makes
2000?
Computers. Yeah, yeah, it's actually Acer's computer, to be honest.
Oh,
it's
Acer. It says increase the performance
they own Gateway.
Of your Gateway SX2841, and this is why, by the way, what a terrible name for a computer. I just bought the SX2841-09E.
Typical Acer numbering.
Jeez Louise. Purchase this card to upgrade your PC and enjoy an increase from 2 to 4-way multitask processing, larger cache, speeding up data-heavy applications, effortless movement between multiple applications. If you don't buy this, you don't get it. It's an in-place upgrade of your existing hardware.
How about this? How about a devil's advocate position which says the following? Rather than having them manufacture 3 different pieces of hardware with mild differences, they ship one piece to you that saves on shipping costs, that saves on a lot of ecological overhead, if you will, and you have the power to unlock those extra capabilities in the same package.
Bogus.
But, this is what bothered me about the Celeron, which was... I think you make a good point, Baratunde, but this is what bothered me about the Celeron, which is they took
the show away from it.
And they made it less, and then they said, we'll sell it to you for less. This capability is built into the machine, though.
The show is not good for the show anymore.
Okay, no morning show for you, Baratunde.
He's done. You got to be a consumer advocate if you're going to do this stuff.
It's built in the morning. It's your built-in wake-up time.
How about that?
He's got a cat named Hip Hop.
Anything but the cat, please.
Or how about this?
Yo, Pixel.
Built-in Baratunde show.
That's what I'm thinking. Built-in and Baratunde in the morning.
Built-a-tunde.
But that's the beauty of this, Baratunde. You do this, you could invite all your friends on.
You are also going to get an apartment or something in New York.
I'm going to move out there.
The New York tech scene is a very exciting place.
I know.
To be.
That's why we wanted a studio. Squarespace has already agreed to have us to allow us to build a studio in their beautiful Soho facility. You've been there?
They're my web host. I'm a big
fan. It's gorgeous. Yeah. So we have the space. We're going to build the studio out there.
This isn't the same as having a bedroom in Manhattan.
Well, you wanted a bedroom. John said if you do this, you got to have a suite for me to stay in.
No, I never said for me to stay in, but for people to stay
in. For people.
A hospitality
for
suite.
People named Dvorak to stay in.
I'm not an idiot.
Actually, Gina, you could stay there too, but only when John's not there.
Well, okay.
I don't know if that happens to be the well.
Oh, see? It is for John.
No, I'm just saying.
I don't know if she could stay there.
No, I think she should come. To the place, that
I'm
is.
Covered. I got places to stay in New York.
I know. I just think it'd be so much fun. We could have a nice studio, fun studio. I've got a couple of other people I think would be great on the show. We'll just set it all up. And then what we'll do is we create a separate channel because it's always morning somewhere. Have you noticed that?
You're stealing all my material.
That's how planet works.
This is all the stuff from the No Agenda show.
If I listened to the show, I'd have stolen it, but I don't listen to your show.
Yeah, that's what you say.
Hey, speaking of which, John, what happened to Cranky Geeks?
Well, Cranky Geeks is closed. Last show will be Wednesday.
That's like one of the seminal shows on the net. I mean, you've been doing this for 3 or 4 years.
Four and a half years. 4.56 years.
Wow.
And it's done.
Now, Mevio and Ziff Davis jointly own the show.
No, no. Ziff Davis owns the show, but they have a joint venture for marketing the show and producing the show and selling ads.
Now, Mevio, are you a vice president, Mevio?
Apparently.
We had Adam Curry on a couple of weeks ago. He said he's not there anymore.
No, he's still there, but he's not there.
What's Mevio's going under?
No, it's not.
Of course it is.
No.
They're canceling their biggest show.
It was canceled by Ziff. It had nothing to do with Mevio.
Ziff canceled it?
Yeah.
Why does Ziff? What's wrong with Ziff?
No, nothing's wrong with Ziff. The problem with the show is if you listen to the...
It sounds just like Twit. That's the problem with it.
Today's No Agenda... If you listen to today's No Agenda show, okay. There's a long explanation in there about what is going on, which is 5 minutes is what everybody wants. The only people that are doing long format are you and Cranky Geeks.
It's not been my experience that anybody really wants a five-minute version of this
show. That's what these advertisers want for pre-roll.
Yeah. See, this is what happened is that a lot of these media companies gave in to CPA, pre-roll, to stuff that is deleterious in the long run to the programming.
Yeah. Oh, terrible.
Because they were desperate for advertising dollars. And in the long run, you hurt the industry by doing that.
Yep.
And you hurt yourself.
Pre-roll.
Well, nobody wants pre-roll. We don't do pre-roll. Won't do it.
Good.
The new Apple TV runs on, apparently, according to hackers, iOS 4.2. I don't know how they know because it's not out yet, but somehow they have some idea. And they say, and by the way, we're going to be able to jailbreak it easily.
Oh. Without a doubt, it's the same OS. It's going to be a joke. And I think people are going to put some apps on it, which I think that'll actually make it worth buying.
Isn't that ironic that Apple wouldn't do the thing that would have made Apple TV huge, in my opinion?
Yeah, they could have made it amazing, and instead they made it. I think the thing about Apple TV that's lovely the size. It's beautiful. It's about the size of
it's gorgeous
an iPhone.
Yeah, but I'm not going to buy because it looks cool.
This crippled thing.
Well, Nick, you're a good perfect example because you're the guy who buys a la carte. Wouldn't you love a device that had all the things you like? Boxy on it, Hulu on it, HBO could do an app.
The
Major
most
League
important
Baseball.
Thing it's not even the a la carte. For me, the most important thing is having access to the amateur content. And you know, when we first got our computer hooked up to our TV. The one thing that we do when I have friends come over, we don't sit around and watch a movie. We literally pass around the remote control and the keyboard, the mouse and the keyboard, and we show each other really funny or interesting YouTube or Vimeo clips that we've seen throughout the week.
That's interesting.
We are our own producers of whatever we're watching at that moment.
Certainly, what my kids did do. Gina, do you do that? Now that you're 35.
I still do that. I mean, I think this is what makes Google TV maybe a little more interesting than Apple TV, right? Because Google TV is going to be running Android. You're going to be able to run apps, but you're also going to be able to get the web, and you're going to have Flash. So, am I going to want the official Boxy app from Boxy on my Google TV, or am I going to want to have to jailbreak and, mess around with my Apple TV to get that on that? I don't know. I might just go with the Android version.
It's interesting.
And the thing is, what Gina brings, this social aspect that Nick talked about of coming over and sharing your favorite clips, that's not merely like a Nick Bilton I Live in the Future thing. I mean, I've seen kids do that. I was hanging out in the Apple store a couple of months ago.
Hold up the
and
book,
teenagers.
Nick.
He should. I encourage everybody.
Might as well.
Buy every version of this book. Buy it in print. Buy it for iBooks. Buy it for Kindle.
Kindle
for
Nook.
Is there an Audible version of it yet, Nick? Did you read the Audible?
It's available for everything, but the iBook store, because Random House and Apple are still fighting. But you can get it for Kindle for your iPad. But there's audiobook, there's print, there's Kindle.
Did you do the reading? Did you do the audio?
I did not, but I spoke to them about it. Wouldn't have been much fun. I would have lost my attention halfway through and wandered off and started talking about gadgets or something like that.
This thing about people coming together around their shared video experiences, or shared experiences, period, but video is a very important part of our lives. I saw kids in the Apple store on 14th Street in New York. They would just come there to share videos with one another. They're all on YouTube. They're all checking out things they favorited earlier, and they're watching videos and laughing and playing and rhyming and doing all this stuff. And it's a highly social. Like, people have this fear that technology disconnects us from one another, that it's unhuman, that it makes us more like machines. But in so many ways,
I love this.
It can actually strengthen the connection that we have to one another. Yeah. And when you see kids who don't have any dogmatic view of these things, this is very natural for them. And they come to a computer and like, I want to watch this video with my friends in the same physical space. That's a beautiful thing to watch. And so to the extent that Apple TV, Google TV, Boxy, et cetera, allow that to happen in our homes where this started. And I remember the 80s when music videos were a new thing and people coming over to watch the latest Michael Jackson video or the latest Prince video or the latest Kumo D video. That was a big deal. And I think it still can be a big deal so long as we maintain the environment that encourages that and don't lock things down too much.
I think that with that respect, I think, you know, one of the things, and I'm not just trying to plug my book. I'm just saying, like, one of the reasons why I wrote this is because I think that all these articles that say the internet is bad for us and it's ruining our brains and all these things, you're essentially taking away literacy from this next generation of kids.
I agree.
That is growing up in this world where it's a changing society.
It's a different kind of literacy. And our form of literacy isn't the same anymore. This is it is on audible.com. I know Audible's not an advertiser tonight, but let me play a little bit of Nick's I Live in the Future, and here's how it works.
I haven't actually heard it yet.
It's Mike Chamberlain reading.
You should get a copy.
Cold by Times editors, my colleagues.
They picked him because he sounds like you.
Business articles are there.
It does.
Sports is in the back of the business section on most weekdays. But that's the problem. It's only a collection of what editors think is appropriate. And it doesn't swirl in my preferences.
Actually, Mike's a good reader. I've listened to others of his books. It is on Audible, so.
That's actually the intro where I talk about why I canceled my subscription to the New York Times, so.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
Says someone who gets his paycheck from the New York
Times. That's bold, Nick.
Oh, Nicky, Nick.
Nice.
It's a changing world. It's
Wait
a
minute.
A changing society.
Is that what you told Arthur Oakes Sulzberger? Hey, Artie.
Here's the question on my mind. He's working there. Why doesn't he have a cop subscription, for God's sake?
That's a good point. Why did you even have to pay for it?
What are you paying for anything?
Hey,
it's because it's Gina's birthday. I want to just toss to her because I know she's involved in so many projects. We know her from Lifehacker, but she's been doing a lot of work with this company called Expert Labs, which Anil Dash heads, but he was so excited to get her on staff as a coup. Like, what is the latest news from Expert Labs, Gina? What are you doing?
See, he's a
I got some cool stuff cooking over there.
I just want to point out something.
Yeah.
He's a host already.
He's auditioning for
totally
the show.
He totally took control of the show.
He wants to do the show that you decided.
He's a host
he's
already.
He's obviously stealing everything. He's taking all my moving the show along. And now people in the chat room are saying I'm a dud. I should get out of here because Baratunde is better than I am. He's which is possible.
He's also better looking. Go ahead, Gina. What's going on? What's going on at Expert Labs?
So I'm building this open source web application. It's called ThinkUp, and you can install it on your web server. And we've come a really long way, really fast. And the beta is actually going to get released next week, early next week, like Monday, Tuesday. But we've got a simple 5-minute web-based installer. You unzip this file onto your web server, and you click through 3 steps. You install it. It gathers all your tweets and Facebook posts and all the replies to those posts and your friends. And it lets you search and export and archive and organize your conversations on various social networks. And in fact, Baratunde has been a test user for quite some time, and he's been one of my best test users. Baratunde, I would love for you to talk about your fishing nets metaphor. But he's so good at sort of crowdsourcing information and getting new ideas from his readers, from his Onion readers, and just his personal Twitter followers. Anyway, so just kind of a pre-plug. ThinkUp is going to be in beta next week. There's a pre-testing zip file out there now you can download if you just follow ThinkUp app on Twitter. And when the beta's out next week, you'll know about it. I'll talk about it on Twig as well. But we are definitely looking for testers and developers. It's a very simple PHP MySQL app. And so we're looking for users and coders. Thank you for the plug, Baratunde. I appreciate it. I want to try it.
It's your birthday.
What does it do again?
It does Twitter analytics. It's actually very interesting.
Yeah. So I'll tell you the practical use from my perspective is, you know, especially all of us on this show have a decent Twitter following. And I think a lot of us use it as a research tool. You ask people, I'm looking for an app that does this. I'm looking for a person that knows this. Reporters use this constantly. And so Nick and the people at the Times are probably using, does anybody know somebody at company X? The problem is with Twitter, there can be such a high volume of communication and replies that phishing goes out a day later or 3 days later or 7 days later is just a real pain. And so what the ThinkUp app allows you to do is attached to the node that is your tweet, see how many times that tweet's been forwarded, quote unquote, or retweeted, and what the replies are to that tweet. You know, if you look at the Twitter.com interface, you'll see people replying to you. They have an in reply to, and it links back to that original tweet. So their architecture, you know, supports linking back to the original, even though they don't support threaded conversations natively. It's sort of built into the architecture. So when you're, as a media organization especially, posting comments or posting a call for input, it can be very useful to go back and see, oh, here are the 40 replies I got to question A, separate from here are the 40 replies I got to question B, separate from here are the retweets I got from statement C. And so that's been quite useful for me personally. I'm using it on a couple of other accounts. But I think as a research tool, it makes Twitter much more usable in the way that Facebook kind of natively supports. You can just look at the timestamp, click on that, and see all the replies in line.
I'm sorry you asked.
I'm sorry. There I provided is. There's so much curmudgeon. Information.
I think it's really cool. I really
love
it.
I want
to
try it.
You do have to run your own server to do it. But I imagine at some point, Gina, people will run this as a service.
I mean, if you set it up, you can open up registration so all your friends can register. And, you know, maybe at some point we will host a, you know, an official, you know, single place where everyone can sign up. But that's not in the cards right now, but maybe eventually. Leo is one of our testers.
Where can we go to get it?
We're working on the website. Go to thinkupapp.com, which is very sparse right now. Next week when the beta release happens, we'll have a much prettier website. But you'll be able to read more information about it actually at the Expert Lab site. There's a link there and download it. It's on GitHub, but we're going to have a much prettier download link next week. So right now we're still in testing. Our official release is next Monday. So, but if you're an early adopter and you're feeling adventurous, grab the zip file and try it out.
But again, it's not something
a blog post on it.
You have to write it. You have to run a server. It's not, you know, you have to have PHP, MySQL, and all of that stuff. It's not
right.
Not something you install on your
no
laptop.
No problem.
Right. Well, I mean, we built it with the idea that if you have, you know, a $5 DreamHost account or even if you just install XAMPP on your Windows machine, you can run it there. Now, I mean, granted, this is definitely for nerds who have web servers for sure. But we tried to make it as simple as possible, the most basic configuration possible.
It's really a great idea. I think it's so cool. Thank you for reminding me about that, actually, Baratunde.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Baratunde.
I'm here to help. I'm here to serve the Twit army.
It's been another great Baratunde. Hey, it's been a great show. I hate to stop, but East Meets West is coming up. Tom Merritt is here. He's going to do a show with Roger Chang. In fact, did you get Roger on your Cranky Geeks?
Yeah, we got him on a couple times.
And that's what happened to the show, I think.
We put him on. The show was canceled.
Yeah. John C. Dvorak is cranky for one more week. Make sure you catch the Cranky
Geeks show on Wednesday.
Final episode on Wednesday. You already done it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's in the can.
It's in the can. So you are in the can as well.
I'm usually in the can.
Yeah. John is at channeldvorak.com, the place to go to find out more about John and all the things he does, including the Great No Agenda show with Adam Curry, our good friend. Baratunde, my next hire. Baratunde.com.
It's always an honor to be here. I'm really glad you brought Nick Bilton from the future.
Your suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
I will take credit for the suggestion. But there's a lot of great talent in New York, and I will keep pushing them your way.
Well, if we had a show, if we only had a studio in New York, maybe we could do that.
Well, we'll keep in touch
on
that. Quite honestly, I'm super flattered and honored and very interested.
You'd be so good for that.
So
good.
Let's keep talking separate from the show.
Yeah, we're not ready to launch it. It's probably the spring of next year, but it's something I've wanted to do for a long time. And their advertisers are champing at the bit for it, so I think it's something we need to do.
Excellent.
New York
is the capital of the world.
It is. It's where everybody wants to be.
It's true.
And you know what, Baratunde? If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
Oh, thanks, Papa Leo.
Nick Bilton, another Brooklynite. NickBilton.com is the place to go. His new book, I Live in the Future, and Here's How It Works, Why Your World, Work, and Brain Are Being Creatively Disrupted. I love the message of it, which is
that the internet is not bad for us, it's good for us, and it's absolutely changing society in an extremely positive way, and we should embrace it, not tell people that they're stupid if they go to Google.com.
It's so obvious to me, and yet so many people think otherwise. So I'm glad you're spreading the word.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show. I really had a great time.
Good. Come back soon.
See ya.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's birthday girl Gina Trapani. Thank you so much for being here. Gina hosts This Week in Google with Jeff Jarvis and myself every Wednesday afternoon. And she writes for Fast Company. Fastcompany.com/worksmart is her new series. She also blogs at her own site, smarterware.org.
Couldn't have thought of a better way to spend the afternoon of my birthday. Thanks for having me.
I'd be honest, when I heard it was your birthday,
Thank
I thought
you.
There's no way. So we can sing Happy Birthday, but we cannot use the AOL copyrighted tune. So let's all sing it in our own tune. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. To you.
An atonal happy birthday.
Atonal. Aw, Gina. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, live.twit.tv. That would be 2200 UTC if you're living outside the U.S., as I know almost half of you now do. We are truly a global venture, and we're so glad you listen. You can watch the show live. You can also download it in audio and video after the fact from twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
When I'm in
no, I think you were here once. I think we did run into each other one time.
Next time.
You just don't remember.
Next
I remember.
Time.
Yeah. I would never forget meeting John C. Dude, I used to read you an Information Week when I was in high school.
Wow.
Yeah, that's unusual. Yeah, it was probably Info World, actually.
Info World,
it was definitely Information Week.
Did you write for Information Week? I've never wrote one word for Information
Info.
Week.
Then it was Info World. Okay, Info you're right. Yeah, yeah.
He was the back page.
Around the kitchen table, and I was a super geeky, nerdy dude. I'm like, I want to read about business IT decisions.
And you are one sick puppy. Yeah,
that is bad.
I'm sorry
that you did that.
But it made me a better person today.